everybody, and welcome back to Kudzu Killers, Homicide, and Sweet Tea. Hope everybody had a great weekend, and we hope you had a chance to listen to the very first episode of our brand new paranormal podcast called Two Chicks and a Crucifix.
All about Lizard Illuminati. You just can't start any bigger than that. So y'all get over there and listen to our Two Chicks and a Crucifix.
We'll work on that. Anyway, we'll have another episode out tomorrow, so be sure to check it out. And then two more next week. And after that, we'll be releasing episodes regularly once a week on Mondays. So y'all come check us out and see if you like it. So what's up with you, Lark? How was your weekend?
Everything's groovy here on the beach of the Texas coast. And, you know, I know the rest of the world's probably hating me, but it's beautiful outside here.
It's been chilly here. We had a little bit of snow last week, but nothing that stuck. And it was just a pretty little downpour of snowflakes. So I want some snow, though, dang it. I want about 10 inches of snow.
Yeah, well, wish in one hand and spit in the other, as we say in Texas.
We say something else in Arkansas, but I'll let you have that one.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm trying to be nice.
It's a family show, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So
I don't know if this one is, but okay. But we went to the Chinese market on Sunday, and I made out my menu for the week, and I worked. And so it was just an average weekend for me. Nothing exciting.
That's fun. I guess we did do one thing. We shoved the Christmas tree in the attic, but that's, yeah.
Better doing it now than February, so you can decorate it with Valentine's.
Yeah, whatever.
Anyway, we're going to talk today about, it's a sad subject, and I just wanted to let people know there's small children involved, and so if that's something that bothers you, you might not want to listen to this show, but we're going to talk about the Walker family murders. This is an old story. It's from 1959, and it's a very sad story and very upsetting in some ways for some folks. So just a heads up. And there's a very interesting twist to the story at the end. So,
am I?
Yeah, so let's get going.
We like twists.
Yes, we do. Now, back in 1959, just before Christmas on December 19th, 24-year-old Christine Walker, that was affectionately known as Tilly by her family and friends, and her husband Cliff Walker, who was 25 at the time, had a pretty good life together. They'd been married for about 4 or 5 years. They had two little babies, Jimmy, who was 3, and Debbie, who was 1, almost 2. Now, Cliff was a ranch hand, and they lived in a little home on Palmer Ranch in Osprey, Florida.
Nice.
Both Cliff and Tilly were rodeo enthusiasts, and she did trick roping, and he roped calves. That's what they did in their spare time at the rodeos, the local rodeos. I'm assuming it's like probably like Texas there with ranches, and they have rodeos every weekend like we do here.
Yeah, they do.
But on that day, December 19th, Tilly had gone to the grocery store, and she returned home about 4. Her car wasn't parked in the usual space, but she'd gone into the house, and she'd put away their groceries and hung her purse up on a peg, where she always did. Now, she was known to like the attention of men, and she had a great figure and wore lots of flattering clothes to show it off. And some people had called her loose and claimed she had affairs, but there was really no sign of trouble in the marriage. They seemed to be very happy, and her sister denies those rumors. Still, the detectives put together their own theory that a boyfriend had met her at home, which is why her car was parked in a weird place, which I kind of find silly since she probably knew her husband was on his way home too with the kids.
Right.
But they theorized that the man took her regular parking spot, like I said, and she parked in a different spot and invited him inside. And they're really reaching for some of these assumptions, but they figured the guy was drunk, and when he tried to hit on her, things got ugly. It looked like she may have been punched in the face that she'd fought him and lost. But then she was raped, and then she was shot twice in the head.
Oh, my.
And evidently, Although the witness didn't mention this, she was covered with the bedspread from Jimmy's bed, which they felt showed a sign that it was someone who knew her.
Right.
So about half an hour later, Cliff showed up at the house with the kids, and unbeknownst to him, there was the man still inside, and they felt that this was a telling clue that the killer was comfortable enough to remain at the crime scene and wait for the rest of the family to get home. And either the Walkers knew his name from earlier telephone conversations, since the Walkers were in the process of selling Christine's car, or the killer hadn't had enough time to get lost, you know, and take off without being caught. Maybe he saw Cliff coming up the road with the kids in the car, and he didn't have a chance to run out and get in his car and leave.
Right, right.
So Cliff walked to the front porch, opened the French doors to go into the house where he was shot.
Oh, man.
And then the killer shot Jimmy, who was three times, and Debbie once.
Oh,
the killer shot her in the head, but the little girl didn't die, they think. So he took her to the bathroom where he filled the bathtub with about 4 inches of water and stuck her head underneath it until she drowned.
Was he just like out of bullets or something? I mean, why?
You know? Well, that's what they surmised. They said they went so far as to say he didn't shoot her again because he ran out of bullets, which I suppose could be true. But, you know, the story just kind of sounds like they were writing a true crime story rather than something that was taken from actual evidence.
Embellishing. I mean, how much can a child that age remember?
Well, and how much detail can you really have from a crime scene like that? I mean, they were really reaching when they were talking about it being a boyfriend that she met there.
Right.
Even though she knew her husband was on his way home.
Right.
And, you know, all this other stuff. So the next day, on December 20th, Cliff was set to go hog hunting with a coworker and friend named Daniel McLeod. They both worked on the same ranch. Now, when McLeod pulled up to the Walker house, things seemed really quiet because there was usually kids running around or something going on, or they were outside getting stuff ready or whatever. And he thought maybe Cliff had overslept. So he got out of his car and he went to the front door and he knocked. And then he knocked again louder. But there wasn't an answer. Nobody answered him. And at that point, he was getting kind of worried. It wasn't like Cliff to stand him up for something like that. And he cut through the screen door to get inside.
Good for him.
Now, just inside the door, he found Tilly. She was lying in a pool of blood, blood pooled all around her.
Aww.
He could tell that she'd been raped and shot in the head. And over in the corner were Cliff and little Jimmy, also both shot in the head. He couldn't see Debbie anywhere. She was missing from the scene that he could see. And he was so shaken, he didn't go searching for her in the house. He just got the heck out of there.
Yeah, me too.
And went down to a neighbor's house and found a phone, the nearest phone he could get to, and called the police.
Yep.
Now, when the police came to search the house, they found Debbie had been shot and drowned in the bathtub. The only things that they could find missing, or among the things they found missing, because they weren't really sure, I don't think, what all could have been missing. Cash could have been gone for all they knew. But they said that the couple's marriage certificate was gone. And they'd hung that proudly on their living room wall because, you know, they were happily married. I can't imagine if they were unhappily married, they'd have that marriage certificate hanging on their living room wall.
Yeah, no way. That's just not something you do.
No. And Tilly's high school majorette costume was gone. And Cliff's pocket knife was gone. And that also led the police to think the couple probably knew their killer or killers and that it might have been a jealous lover.
Right. Ex-boyfriend, maybe from school or something.
Right. And the suspects included McLeod because he's the one that found him, and they always include the person that finds the bodies, right?
Right. Makes sense, but still.
And they also considered a cousin of Cliff's who had a really well-known bad temper and a reputation for flying off the handle in violent anger. So they talked to him also, but those were both quickly cleared, and even though they interviewed a lot of other people, the case ended up being cold. because they just couldn't, I guess they couldn't get a handle on what had happened and what was going on. So we're going to take a little break here and hear from our sponsors who really want us to take a break so you can hear from them. And then we're going to be back and talk about some more stories that have to do with this and some really, a really surprising twist on some suspects in just a minute. Welcome back.
Hey, y'all, it's Lark
and Kim
from Kudzu Killers, Homicide and Sweet Tea, and we're pleased to announce our brand new show, Two Chicks and a Crucifix.
We're going to have a good time yakking about paranormal phenomena like ghosts
and monsters and conspiracy theories
and Bigfoot.
Bigfoot.
You know I'm partial to Bigfoot.
Right. Anyway, we hope you come listen to our new paranormal show and have some fun
in 2021. See, I'm a poet and I didn't know it.
Stop it.
You'll be the ghostest with the mostest.
Cut it out.
We love parapsychology and cryptozoology. And welcome back to the story of the Walker family murders. Later, there was a confession from convicted serial killer Emmett Monroe Spencer, but his story was fabricated, according to police, and it contained details he'd most likely gotten from crime novels or newspaper clippings or something like that. And this guy was well known. He was in prison for murdering a doctor, I believe, but he was a known serial killer. But he was also a known pathological liar, so his confession really didn't hold much water, and they dismissed him pretty quickly. But they questioned 587 suspects in this case.
Holy moly!
And nothing panned out. They never could find the person they thought did it. So like I said, it sat for 50 years in a box on the shelf in Sarasota, when in 2012, some detectives in Sarasota County dug up the files and decided to reopen the case. Two people who had always been considered suspects from the get-go were already well known for murdering an entire family about 1,700 miles away in Holcomb, Kansas. Can you guess who that was?
Oh my. No. Please tell me.
The family was the Clutters. Ringing any bells yet?
Oh.
Which you may remember from Truman Capote's true crime novel, In Cold Blood.
Right, right, right.
The Clutters were murdered almost exactly 1 month before the Walkers.
Oh, wow.
And it was known that the killers, Perry Smith and Richard Hickok, had traveled to Florida after those murders. They'd been seen there. They killed the Clutters because they'd heard that Herbert Clutter kept a lot of money in a safe in his house, and they wanted that money. And it turned out Mr. Clutter didn't keep much money at home at all. Mm-hmm. He wrote checks for spending money, and they ended up getting only $50.
Oh, man.
From that, and not even $50, less than $50.
Oh, my goodness.
Terrible. But a little important detail I felt was important was Hickok wanted to rape and was planning to rape the Clutter's 16-year-old daughter, Nancy, and Smith talked him out of it. Go ahead.
Oh, but now they did follow through with the rape on the Walker family.
Right. They followed through the rape on Tilly Walker, mm-hmm. you know, if this was them.
Right.
Now back to 2012, they wanted to see if the two men people had felt was responsible for decades were really the killers of the Walker family. The investigation back in 1960 went nowhere, and they passed polygraphs saying they didn't do it, I believe. But, you know, polygraphs can be wrong.
Of course.
But detectives in 2012 petitioned to have the bodies of Perry Smith and Richard Hickok, who I believe they were buried in, you know, unassuming coffins in pauper's graves somewhere in Kansas, right, mm-hmm. after they were executed for those murders.
Makes sense.
They wanted to test for mitochondrial DNA from the bones against the DNA found on Tilly Walker's underwear.
Loving that DNA!
Mm-hmm. They were allowed to dig them up and test some bone material against that DNA, but the DNA was too degraded to make a comparison of yes or no. So we still don't know for sure who murdered the Walkers in cold blood.
Oh, wow. Bummer.
But here's what I think. Y'all get to hear my theory.
Go ahead on, theorize, Kim, because Kim's got good theories. You're probably right. You're probably right.
Yeah, we'll see. My money's on Smith and Hickok, of course. Mm-hmm. They were spotted in the area near Sarasota and near Osprey right before the murders.
Mm-hmm.
And think about it. They knew police were looking for them.
Right.
And they might even have a description of the car they were driving or a license plate. And when I saw that the Walkers had been advertising Tilly's car for sale and trying to sell it, I'm thinking, who's to say that they didn't see that too? And they went to the house under the guise of looking at the car, mm-hmm. or they went by the house thinking they'd steal that car,
mm-hmm.
or something like that. And maybe nobody was there. So they went inside and waited. Or maybe they were there until he had put the groceries away when they knocked on the door and she thought it was Cliff.
Okay, well, I'm a little... Okay, take me back a second. Didn't he work on a ranch?
They worked on a ranch. He worked on a ranch and they lived on that ranch in a little house.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you. That's what I would have assumed, that normally, especially... Well, even now, most people that work on a ranch like that, they live there. And even that far back, I mean, Sarasota wasn't that, it just wasn't that populated. So it would have been a lot of...
It was like L.A. in the 50s. It was a lot of orange groves in L.A. in the 50s. It was mostly farmland and ranchland. There wasn't
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of easy for them to roll up on that house and have a whole lot of time and do whatever they wanted to do, really and truly, because there's probably nobody around. Or even if they are, maybe that day they're out working the fields or whatever. And
She pulled up, since her car was out of place and it wasn't where it was supposed to be. Maybe she pulled up, saw that odd car there, didn't think anything of it when she went into the house and she thought it was empty or it was empty. Mm-hmm. And like I said, they knocked on the door or they caught her in the house.
Right, right.
And this time Smith let Hickok have his way with her because, you know, maybe he was getting a little unruly and he thought that would take care of it or something. I don't know. But I think that they were there.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows why they took a marriage certificate and a majorette uniform and a pocket knife, if they took the pocket knife. You know, mementos. Killers like mementos.
Well, maybe just to throw them off, the cops off the scent too a little bit, you know.
Yeah,
but
possibly. And they might have thought these people would have some money too. Maybe they looked through all the drawers and that's all they could find. So they said, well, hell, I'll take this, you know.
Well, I don't know. Maybe they, you know, they used to always frame things that were important to you, like your baptism mm-hmm. certificate or whatever. And way back then, people used to hide money and stuff behind pictures. So maybe they thought, this is important.
Maybe they did. Yeah.
And they snatched that and, you know.
Maybe it did have some money behind it. Who knows?
Right. I mean, we're just speculating. We're just spitballing here.
This is just our ideas. And
yeah.
We won't really ever know what happened to them, I don't suppose.
That's a shame.
But that has tortured Tilly's sister, Vella, for almost all of her adult life.
I can see that.
She was 4 years younger than Tilly, and they got married in a double ceremony when Vella was just 16.
Oh.
And she was pregnant with her first child when her sister was murdered.
Oh.
So every November when it was Tilly's birthday and every December when it was the anniversary of the murders, she sinks into a deep, dark depression.
Well, I guess, poor thing.
And she said her family didn't have very good Christmases ever because she was always in this depressive state when it happened.
Right.
And she was hopeful that all would change after the bodies were exhumed and the DNA testing confirmed the guilt of Smith and Hickok. And I'm not sure, I couldn't find anything about how she took it when they couldn't link the DNA, but I'm thinking she was pretty sure after the detectives exhumed the bodies that they knew who did it.
Mm-hmm.
And she said after that she'd had the first decent Christmas ever with her children.
Aww.
So, you know, it's such a sad story, and parents never knew what happened to their children or grandchildren. And Truman Capote, when he released In Cold Blood in 1966, said he didn't believe Smith and Hickok had anything to do with the Walker murders. But I think he was wrong. What do you
think? Didn't he actually interview them in the jail?
Yes, he did. He was actually present for their executions.
Right. That's what I thought.
And Harper Lee, because Harper Lee was his best friend. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she went and tried to help him out with this book in Cold Blood and everything. Mm-hmm. And I think he kind of got enamored of the two guys, Smith and Hickok. I think he kind of started to like them. Although I think he knew they were guilty, mm-hmm. I think he kind of started to like them. So maybe he just didn't want to believe they could be guilty of the Walker murders as well.
Well, you know, he had a bunch of his own little hang-ups too. But you know what? I would think it would be another horrible trigger that if she had her sister, you know, had a double wedding with Tilly, mm-hmm. to look at her wedding license, her wedding certificate, just to think, oh my God, you know, to feel violated as, at the same time. Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah. And that first marriage didn't work out. And so that was probably a big part of the reason why, because she couldn't get past this, I would think.
Right.
Plus the fact that she was 16 when she got married, but that happened a lot back then, you know.
That's true. That's true.
But Tilly had talked her into getting married to her boyfriend, and she did. That she wanted a double wedding. So
yeah, she probably thought that would be super romantic and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, people did get married at that young of an age.
Occasionally,
at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for other reasons, well, all kinds of reasons. But wow, that's so interesting.
She always resented them trying to say her sister was loose, and that's the reason her whole family was murdered. You know, she said that just wasn't true. And she really, really, it really bothered her a lot when the police tried to bring that into their theory. And yeah, she was a very attractive woman, and yeah, she showed off her assets, but she said she wasn't. She said they were very happy in their marriage, and she wasn't, you know, a philanderer. She didn't run around and have affairs with guys all over the place like jealous women in the town seem to think she did. You know how jealous women can be catty and talk about somebody and make all kinds of stuff.
And she was probably getting a lot of attention, even if she wasn't reciprocating or anything. And
their
husbands were probably
taking a look at her as
outgoing, and her personality sounded like, you know, she was out there barrel riding and roping and all that. She's pretty outgoing and probably a pretty impressive little lady there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, other women would be super hating on that, I can see.
I'm sure. Yeah.
No, that's a shame.
But that's my story.
Well, that was interesting.
It's a short but sweet one. I just like the theory that Smith and Hickok did it. I'm pretty sure that's right, but we'll never know for sure.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, I really do agree with you just from the pieces of the puzzle. Not that we know for sure, like you say, but I have to agree with you. And
thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah.
And be sure to check out tomorrow's episode of Two Chicks and a Crucifix, where I'll be talking alien abduction and anal probing. So
we can't wait to hear this one, Carol. Because we love cube stories.
we will talk to you guys later, and I hope you come and see us tomorrow. And don't forget Forensic Fridays. We're back with Forensic Fridays. So
that's right. So you guys, don't bury the bodies without us.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye, y'all.